Good morning. This is Brass Tacks.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Oh, I am super. I'm super.
Yes, Mr. Price. Thank God for God sparing us another time. But thank you. I'm one person that medical and say it's so hard. We have been promised, and nothing has come forward. What's going on?
What have you been promised?
You know, we were promised our pension back.
Sorry? So, I didn't hear that.
We have been promised our pension back since June, July, August, and nothing has came.
This is disability?
Yes, disability, yeah. Today the 27th and nothing. Today $21. I don't know. I don't know what's really going on. Mr. Straw came last month and said he couldn't get it on in July, but definitely we're going to get it on in August. August gone and nobody come to say anything.
I think that's the worst part, that you have not had that level of communication from the Treasury. Have you actually visited the Treasury building, or have you called?
The Treasury said that they haven't got no information from nobody to put it back on. They said they haven't got no information. I was waiting, but nobody never said nothing. So I don't know.
That's what you're told when you're called. Yeah. I just want to be precise.
Yeah, they don't have the information about putting it back on. I don't know where it comes, but when Sean said last month he was trying to get back on in July, but he didn't get it back on. But he would definitely, he said to Miss Hale last month, definitely in August we would get it back. And it was really hard. You got your pension.
Would you like to tell us exactly what you're going through because of this not getting the pension?
Yeah, but when you got your rent to pay, and then that when you get in, can only buy food and pay bills, and many a month you can't pay the credit union and things like that. Hard.
Is your voice well known?
Pardon, not really.
Okay,
yes,
but you're talking to the whole.
I have Dr. John Hager ready.
You're talking to the whole of Barbados right now,
yeah.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Why I'm asking that is because I want to ask you some personal questions. I hope you don't mind, because I want to get a sense, and I want Barbadians to get a sense of what you're going through. I think that if they have that, they maybe would understand it more so from your eyes as well. Like, how much pension you used to get before? What was the total amount?
The one that is $1,300.
So you used to get $1,300 before?
Yeah.
Okay, and you also get a national insurance benefit, correct?
Yes, please.
Okay, and so in all you, what was that, about $1,500 or more?
What it is, no, $900.
Okay.
Because they had told me when they get 67, it will stop.
Right. Good. So, okay, and you're not 67 yet?
No, not 67
good.
Yet.
So okay. So we'll just round it off that you could have made, you were getting at least $2,000 every
yes,
month.
Please.
Good.
Yes, please.
Now, and you have a disability so that you can't work, correct?
Yeah, work at all. Yes, please.
Good. But you're renting.
Yes, please.
What was your rent like on a monthly? Is on a monthly basis?
$5.75 a month.
And then you still have the utilities to pay.
Yeah, I have food to buy and everything.
And you still have? You have any loans or anything like that?
Yeah, I pay back the credit union.
Okay, so that your expenses on a monthly basis.
$8.50 a month at the credit union.
Okay, so we're talking at least. $1,500 that you used to spend every month. Wow, on just bills and rent.
Yes, ma'am.
And you really had very little room to maneuver.
Yeah, very very little. And then
so,
got my doctor bills.
Mm-hmm.
The doctor bills, many months come, cause I have to go to the doctor every month and doctor bills, and oh dear, hard, really hard.
And when you have these doctor bills. You go to the doctor in the private sector, or you go to the doctor at the hospital or the polyclinic?
I do both. Because when you go to the hospital, it's different. Just as you go, I get some of the surgery, the private, you have to pay it for them.
I see. And what is your monthly doctor bill like on average?
I sometimes pay like $150, $200. Kind of what it is.
Wow. So really and truly, although you were getting $2,000 a month in terms of disability benefit as well as the benefit from the NAS, by the time your bills and your rent and your doctor fees are all put together, you really didn't have much disposable
got
income
nothing,
at all.
Ain't got nothing. With any month, I can't pay the credit union. So I have to do. I got a letter from them last week, but there ain't that much I can do.
So for the last 3 months, what has life been like for you?
Rough.
Tell me how. When you say rough, exactly.
Rough, but I can't.
Give us an example, so that those listening right now, those policymakers listening right now, would know exactly what you are going through.
Yeah, probably by the food that I'm accustomed buying, and the food that I need to get, I should be eating.
So you're on a special diet?
Yes, please. And it's actually really hard. They need to do something.
All right. I know that you're saying that they need to do something, but we've heard that before. What I want you to do is to tell us exactly what you're going through. That way, it gets home to everybody. Look, this is really serious because you're just one and there are several other people. So could you just tell us what it was like for you, at least for last month, for example? Were you able to eat 2 or 3 times a day as you are accustomed to? Did you have to change the way you eat?
Yeah, I have to change the way I eat.
How so? Tell us about it.
I can't buy the things that I usually have to get, the medication, the vitamins and things, and the bills. It's rough. Something you hardly, just buy where you could afford and leave out the rest.
All right, well, I'll leave that there. But I think that everyone who can hear your voice would have some idea of what you're facing right now.
And yeah, we need that money.
We can only hope from here that we can get in touch with Mr. Strawn and the accountant general.
He was calling Jordan first, and then he came and made a big promise, and then nothing to a bill that hasn't happened. Okay. And it were rough.
Okay.
Thanks for calling me.
No, thank you very much for talking with us.
Okay, thank you.
God bless. Bye-bye. Welcome back to Brass Tacks. You're on the air. Good morning.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Morning.
Good morning to you.
Before I get into what you call about, I want to ask you something that I'm getting you angry. But if you get angry, it really don't matter to me. I want to know what you would have achieved by asking a lady just know all her personal business and then tell the lady God bless. What you were hoping to achieve by asking lady all her personal business?
I was hoping to get her to talk about what she's going through so that it resonates with the policymakers who would recognize the urgency of the matter. It is one thing, just you ask me a question, let me answer, please. It is one thing for somebody to come and say, it hard. Okay, it is hard. It is hard for me, it's hard for you in our own way. When a person actually outlines precisely what they are going through on a day-to-day basis, that brings home the message of just how difficult their circumstances are. And that is why the first question I asked her is if her voice is well known. Okay? That's why I asked her that question before I asked anything else. Because if her voice was well known, because I can't remember hearing her voice, but if her voice was well known and she had said yes, then I would not have proceeded. Because I really wanted to really sort of get down to it so that the policymakers listening, because they monitor these programs, they would know that life is really impossible for these people. And these are people who are going through a hard time. And the thing about it is, we don't know how many people are involved. We have no idea. And we're trying to get that information. You can't get it. So it needs to be exposed. The only way it's going to be exposed is when people talk about a thing. So yes, some people would get offended and say, well, you're making a person talk about their business and whatnot. But the only way people can fully understand what the other individual is going through is when they disclose their business. Okay?
If you really want to ask her anything, there's two questions or three questions that you should have asked. One, is this she getting help from anywhere else? Two, is she live alone? And three, is she have a husband? Then the things you should ask her that you didn't ask. But anyway, that is it, Mayor. Let me move on. I heard you and Mr. B. We're still friends, right? And don't forget, I tell you, I used to take the bar for you where you can't get the weight off your chest. It's good in the gym.
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah, where you're prone and heavy.
Mm.
Anyway, you still training though?
No, I don't train.
Okay, listen though, let me move on. I hear you, Mr. P, this morning speaking. And Mr. P says something that I'm in total agreement with. Because I was saying that for the longest time. I said, and even now, more so than before, with the unreliability of the transport of war buses, we should put things in place for any emergency. Like, for example, if a transport board bus going on Turnersaw, you know what Turnersaw Hill?
Yeah.
You know what I hear?
Mm-hmm.
That hill long and steep.
Mm-hmm.
Let me say a bus can only understand it happened, God forbid. What happens? What do you think happened? So my argument is that at the bottom of that hill, they should got a runoff. Where the bus can, if anything happened, the bus can go right across the road onto the runoff. The runoff would be sand and gravel and thing. And they got an upward curvature that will slow the bus down. You with me, Sanka?
Yeah.
Right. And I'm saying that they should look at hills around this country and putting that kind of system in it so as to avoid any real disaster. And I think they should start with Turnersaw Hill. Because Turnersaw Hill is long and steep and they need something like that at the bottom. Plus somebody even put a, but I went on there recently, so I don't know if it's still there. But the last time I went on there, somebody put a container right down the bottom of the hill. So I send a canal out here to run off the road, they're going to run and you slam into that container. That container won't shift to one side or the other. The other thing I was saying is that, and this is something I've been saying for a long time, in town, they should build the sidewalks in a way that no vehicles can't get upon them. And I said that because of behind the old Barclays Bank down the wharf. You used to pass there and see some big SUVs up on top of the sidewalk and pedestrians got walking road. You know anything about that? You used to see them?
Yeah.
And
you still
and
see
I
it?
Huh?
You still see it? You see it all over, not only there.
Yeah,
but I would also tell you that I remembered to join overcrop over period. I saw and I had to smirk that the licensing people were out giving tickets to people who park all over the sidewalks around Kensington Oval, and I thought it was long overdue, but you know.
But the other thing I want to mention. And I mentioned this here to the transport authority. I mentioned it to the police. I mentioned it to the fellow that was on CBC at 10:30 on the morning, Joe, if I learn people to drive.
Jordan.
Yeah, Jordan. Then Jordan. Mm-hmm. Jordan. I told them, everybody told, because I think that one of the things that they should look at is in the roundabouts. And I can use the words roundabout as the classic example. You see, if you coming to the highway from south, you coming to the roundabout from the south, approaching the Warren's roundabout by the polyclinic,
they got some steel
barriers there, and those steel barriers are on the inside of the pedestrian wall, so that if a car come down, let's say a car coming from the south. And coming that roundabout to continue on straight, but the driver lose control, and somebody is in that roundabout. To save themselves, they've got to jump over that steel barrier, and then they're going to go down the ditch. You with me?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I am saying that those steel barriers should be at the edge of the road so that if a car comes down, coming from any direction, as a matter of fact, and the driver loses control, because he can lose control quite easily, and the driver loses control, as opposed to hitting the person on the pedestrian wall, they will hit the barrier. And all that can happen, the front of the car might get mashed up, or might get a couple of bruises. And in the process, they will be saving a life, because the body behind the barrier now will have to be running and hopping and jumping over the steel barrier and falling in a ditch and probably break the hand or the foot or something. And if it's an old person, they can't get away at all. Mm-hmm. So I surprise you understand what I'm telling you? I hope you understand what I'm telling you or not.
Yes, I do.
Right.
All right.
So that is one of the things I feel I should look at. And implement that in the roundabouts to protect the pedestrians. The last thing you want to say before you go, when I was a schoolboy, coming from Wesley Hall School and coming on Westbury Road in the evening, or if I'm on vacation, I used to see people reading at the side of the road, Sanka. Listen, like. I used to see people reading at the side of the road, and they had a man with a donkey cart.
I remember them days.
Right, and the man had two knock knees. The man was
That's the exact guy I'm thinking of when you mentioned that, because I could see him now with the cap. Remember, he used to wear a cap too.
A felt hat.
A felt right on his head. Yeah, I remember right, that.
A felt hat. You know, and that man could barely walk. And he might still go shovel all his stuff.
I remember those days. But you don't forget, you know, you're talking about the 60s, late 60s, though, you know?
Yeah, no, I'm talking about the late 50s and into the early 60s.
Why are you talking about I know you're talking about, the man talking about is the 60s. I remember that.
The 60s, too, in the 60s.
Yes, the 60s.
In the 60s, too.
Yes.
Because in the late 60s, that's when I went to
where's the
Richmond.
Hall?
To Richmond.
Oh, okay.
I transferred from Wesley Hall to Richmond.
All
right. The two best schools in the whole wide world.
All right, sir.
Wesley Hall and Richmond.
All right, thank you for your contribution, though. We got a whole set of it. I had it all for 12 minutes so far.
Let me finish this, sir. Let me finish it by saying this. And if that man in those days could shovel up with two knock knees and got a hold on for the car for balance, why in this time when they got so much
mechanization.
They can't get inside the roads clean.
But you know what's amazing? Rainy days of the donkey cart and whatnot, guys used to get a really efficient job done. Now that you have these one tray things and these skid row things, the bobcats and that sort of stuff, it seems that you can hardly get anything done. But it's the price of progress, I guess. Thanks a lot, man. You're on the air. Good morning.
Hello. Hi. Good morning, Sanka.
How are you, Wesley? I haven't heard you in a while.
Man, you know, I'm picking my moderators now, you know.
I ain't getting down with you.
Pardon me?
I ain't getting in and so with you today.
No, I heard you. I hear you well.
I said I'm not getting into that moderator talk with you.
I'm picking my moderators, and right now I'm down to about three or so.
Oh, Lord. You're running out of them, man.
I'll call you, so it means that you're still on my bucket list, right?
I know if that's good, though.
It should be good for you, man. Anyhow, let me just say this here, right?
Uh-huh.
You know, I could listen to you, and people call it anti-American. Well, he unmasked himself, and everybody knows his name now. But I label him as the fast-talking guy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I could listen to you and the fast-talking guy for the whole entire day. Right? He don't bore me. But I find when moderators cannot debate the man, they cut you off, they treat you bad. However, you seem to go toe-to-toe with the guy, and you and he have a very good rapport, and I like that.
He and I share a lot more ideas than he thinks.
Yeah,
I would not put it over the way he puts it over.
Yeah.
But I have great respect for a lot of his ideas, because I do share a number of ideas with him, you know.
The man is just different. And the man shoot from the hip at all times. And he ain't want to suck up or the other fancy word to anybody.
All right.
Anyhow.
I know you didn't call for that, but just quickly, right? Just quickly. He has this thing, he has a beef against lawyers. And for whatever reason, I don't know, I don't even want to know, but he has a beef against lawyers. But some of the points that he raises, that he has raised over the last several months, if they came from somebody else, you would find that we would actually be debating those points because they're good points, but they need to be raised, and they need to be discussed. But it's just, you know, sometimes when one person says something because that person has a certain aura, we dismiss the individual.
You know,
when somebody else says it, they listen. So that's why, despite the tete and tete between himself and I always tend to listen to him because he does make some good points.
Yeah, of course. But I would say this to you, you could use that thing of beef against lawyers. You can use that same approach when dealing with moderators. You would think that you don't like moderators. Mm-hmm. The man just shoot from the hip. He ain't there to suck up to nobody.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
He speak what on his mind, and he made logical sense to me, you know. I don't always agree with the guy, but I can tell the truth. More often than not, I agree with him.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a side. Let me jump to my thing now.
Yeah,
right?
Go right ahead, man.
I'm not here at all in any way, form, shape, or fashion, according to Patrick King, to defend Glenn Murray.
Mm-hmm.
I would not even attempt to do it, right? But I want to know, what is this that Glenn Murray would have said that is so wrong yesterday, you know? However, this is my part now, and I know people like Tallboy and them can call back and tell me that I can march back to the Democratic Labour Party, right? Because if you speak your mind, if you speak with any reasonable consciousness of experience or what you would have experienced yourself, people seem to get uneasy with your comments. But I would just say this here, right? I would just say this here. In respect of the Democratic Labour Party, the alternative government that we always use in Barbados, both the Barbados Labour Party and the Democratic Labour Party, I bordering on 60 years now, okay? Me and you share the same birth year. You and I share the same birth year, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I will say this to you, Sanka. From the time I know myself, there was always the Barbados Labour Party or the Democratic Labour Party. And if the arithmetic is right, the Democratic Labour Party was around playing practicing their political craft in Barbados for at least 57 years. That is not a fly-by-night party. It cannot be a fly-by-night party. Okay? And this thing...
64,
like,
actually. They started in 1955.
Hello?
64 because they started in 1955. I was just correcting you.
1955, the Democratic Labour Party was formed in 1955?
Yeah.
Well, that means that's over 60 years.
Right, 64.
About 7 years, ain't it?
Mm-hmm. 64. Anyhow, go ahead and make your point. It was just, that's an aside.
No, I was just looking at the 66 thing, right? Yeah.
I thought you dropped out. Sorry.
No, I dropped out. You said 57.
There's 64. 64 years. 64. 64.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Mm. Fair enough. All right. I thought you said 50. I thought you said 54.
No.
However, each time a political party, whether BLP or DLP, won and won handsomely, you always hear the other party going to be in the political wilderness for 25 or 40 years. We hear that. We hear it in 2008. We hear it in 1999. And indeed, we hear it now from 2018. All right? That is a myth that party supporters and loyalists get comfortable with. The reality is this. Every political party that won a landslide in Barbados, right? Bounce back. that at least 43% of the vote. You understand what I'm saying, right? Right, Sanka?
Yeah, they also, people who say that.
Also bounce back.
Yeah, but people who say that don't recognize history. You know Harold Wilson, the Prime Minister,
you know,
the old
really
Prime Minister
low,
of the
you know.
British.
I hear you low. You're coming through low.
Oh, I don't understand why. Because my mouth is right on just above the microphone. Anyhow, I'm saying that Harold Wilson, the old Prime Minister from Britain, he once said a week is a long time in politics.
It's a long time in politics.
Right? And so when I hear people talking about, oh, what's going to happen over the next 3-4 years, we do not know what's going to happen over the next 3-4 years. We simply do not know. The reality, well, not the reality, the likelihood is that the Barbados Labour Party should win again, given the majority that they have, unless something major happens that they squander the opportunities that they have to rule now. But we do not know what is going to happen. When the Barbados Labour, when the Democratic Labour Party won in 1986, I don't think any of us expected Mr. Barrow to die the following year in June, in June 1987. And we certainly did not expect that Dr. Richie Haynes would part with the Democratic Labour Party by 89. We just didn't see it. Okay? But all these things happened. Okay, you won in 86. By 87, the skipper was dead. By 89, the NDP, I think it's 89, the NDP had been formed. And you had, and the three blind mice, they were displaced as the opposition.
Yes.
None of that was seen. Okay? And likewise, when Owen Arthur moved the vote of no confidence.
In 94. Okay,
in 94. But nobody would have expected for him to lose, to win that vote. But that was the first time in the Commonwealth, that a prime minister had been defeated by a motion of no confidence.
Sanka?
Mm-hmm.
Hello?
Yes.
Good. I want to say this to you.
No. Right? Save it right now and don't go away. I got to take a commercial break and then we can come right back.
We're back with you, Wesley.
Yeah, how's my level? My voice still sounds low?
No, actually, it's good now.
Okay, all right.
Very good.
All right, go right ahead then.
Good.
You were making a point.
You can hear me well, too.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Sanka, watching the voting pattern and the election trend in Barbados over the years, it appeared to me that the only time the Barbados, and I can say it slowly so that nobody should misunderstand what I am saying. The only time the Barbados Labour Party win any government in Barbados, it is only because the Democratic Labour Party members, supporters, and well-wishers vote against the Democratic Labour Party. Because in my opinion, there are more Democratic Labour Party members, supporters, and well-wishers for the Democratic Labour Party than there is for the Barbados Labour Party. So in essence, what I'm saying, in order for the Barbados Labour Party to win an election in Barbados, they have to pull on the strength or the support of the Democratic Labour Party members, supporters, and well-wishers. That's a proven fact. Right? And the day that the members, supporters, and well-wishers of the Democratic Labour Party decide to go back to base, the Barbados Labour Party got problems. So the point that I'm trying to make, check, you just highlighted 94. When Richie Haynes formed the opposition party leading up to that, 94, I think, when they vote against Sir Lloyd, right? So Lloyd had a hell battle on his hands, but he still was able to prevail because the members and supporters of the Democratic Labour Party The baddest, the party members and supporters don't move no way. Let me get that straight. They don't move from base. Right? And when the Democrat Labour Party was split in 1994, Sir Lloyd Erskine Sandiford at the time still was able to pull through.
Was in 91.
Yes, that was in 91. Mm-hmm. Correct, 91. Right? Mm-hmm. He lost the battle through the no confidence motion. They had a chance then, so we couldn't get you at the polls, let me get you in the parliament. Right? Mm-hmm. And that is how it play out. That is how it play out. So then in 2008, we come down to 2008, where David Thompson win the government handsomely, you know, not as handsome as Mayor Motley, because she moved the earth to please. People went with Mayor Motley, and Mayor Motley had a good slogan. Just to answer Winnie, she wants to know what vitamin Mayor Motley, Prime Minister, take. She take one important vitamin, the vitamin called People's Person. That's the only vitamin Prime Minister Motley take, People's Person. Okay?
Mm-hmm. All right, Wesley, I give you 15 minutes and 15 seconds. Yeah, you got to wind up.
I wind up by saying this. Truth to be told, after all of that, in 1999, right? When the Democratic Labour Party was partially wiped out, mm-hmm. they were still able to bounce back with 9 seats. You know, and then a few years later, they captured the government.
Yeah.
So I want the people to dismiss this foolishness. And for the record, Wesley is still a member of Mayor Motley bandwagon.
All right, sir. And you have a good day. Thank you very much for holding. You were on for close to an hour.
I'm glad you know that.
Ah.
You know very well, I do as well. Now, of course.
I don't know who's holding on, but I have a clock.
But you know, you always put your foot in your mouth.
Yeah, just hold on. Right.
Now, let me get straight. Now, if I don't complete this, I will come back after the news.
Yes, because there's 4 minutes to go.
You see what I mean?
There's 4 minutes to go before the.
You see me? Only gave me a little time to talk.
Well, could you just hold a second? All right.
Yeah.
Good. Thanks. Just let me talk a minute. There are 4 minutes to go. I'll let you make your point, and I will give you your time. I have no problem with that. But before you get into your point, I was hoping that you call because I recognize that I said something to you, which I was really joking, but you were very offended by. Now, if I'm going to offend somebody, I would offend him, and I really don't particularly care. But I didn't mean to offend you because I had no reason to whatsoever. So I do apologize if I offended you when I said you could go. No, let me finish, please.
All right, go ahead.
When I said, no, go and drive a taxi, because you have always been very proud and I've always asked you about that. So I was not angry or anything when I said that. But you have obviously, based on your interactions over the last couple of days, taken that as an offense. I would never have done that. Okay, not deliberately or otherwise. Okay, so let me get that out of the way. Anyhow, you have 3 minutes now. In fact, 2.5 minutes. Then we'll take the break for the.
I can reply to what you said, and then I can raise my issue after the news.
Okay, go right ahead.
Let me say this: I would never ever be offended as a taxi driver. We had a man by the name of Emmy Cox is a taxi driver. What I was offended with you is not disclosing the information about the national insurance. That's all I was concerned about. Taxi driver don't mean that. I do 3 things all morning. First thing I do is I read my Bible, read my newspaper, and taxi driving comes before the newspaper, right? And since then, I have do some research, and I got some real informative information to you and the public that I want to release as soon as we get back to news. But I'm not offended, Psycho. You know that, too. You should know me by now. As a broad-backed political person.
Mm-hmm. But it said that I wasn't revealing information. I was just giving you a you wanted a yes or no answer, and I was just trying to show you.
I wanted to know what was going to become of the National Insurance.
And I was trying to... David gave you... Because David was on it in terms of...
disclosed to me what he wanted.
Right. And I didn't even have that information. Okay?
Are you? So you could have said that.
But no, but I could not give you that. What I was trying to explain to you was that if you have an investment fund, what happens is that when if something goes belly up, those people who would have put money into that would have first call. And that's basically the same thing David told you, because he says that they would have, the NAS would have kept the money, kept whatever money is to come to them in there in terms of having it as an investment, because that's what they really want. We got to take a break for the news right now for the regional roundup. So just stay there. And as soon as the regional roundup is over, we come and we'll go straight into your contribution today, okay?